According to Beyond Blue, depression is the leading cause of disability worldwide.
So mental and physical health to me are absolutely inextricably linked. I don't think they can be considered separately. I think we need to look at both. And to do that, we have to then start considering what's going on from the neck up, not just what's going on from the neck down.
We've talked a lot over the past episodes of all the reasons people enjoy being self-employed. The freedom, working your own hours, being able to work on a project that you're passionate about, and having some kind of control over who you work with and what you work on. You're listening to Not Another Business Show, Season 1, Episode 19. Throughout the season, we've heard many great reasons to bask in the sunshine of self-employment. But what about the things that as small business owners we face that aren't often talked about? Long hours, potential isolation if you work from home, or not being with your family and friends as much as you'd like due to work pressures. Financial stress of running a business, as well as the questions around health and well-being that can run through your mind. What if I fall sick? Who will run the business? When the answer is sadly, often, no one. Which leads to many of us fronting up and continuing to work even when we really are too sick to do so. The uncertainty that comes with not knowing where your next job will come from, and the pressure that can be felt from having multiple responsibilities within the one business. Let's get real for this episode. I mean, really real. Working for yourself in a small business as an entrepreneur can be tough. It's not always sunshine and roses. It can be a downright hard slog at times. And for those of us who have ever experienced depression or a depressive episode in our lives, it can be a roller coaster that makes you want to stop the ride. So this week, in honour of October being Mental Health Awareness Month, I'm chatting to the experts around our mental health as business owners. What to watch out for, how to see the signs that you might be on a downward spiral, and what, if anything, you can do about it. Beyond Blue estimate that 45% of Australians will experience a mental health condition in their lifetime. In any 1 year, around 1 million Aussies will have depression and 2 million will have anxiety. Anxiety is common. On average, 1 in 3 women and 1 in 5 men will experience an anxiety condition at some stage in their life. And there are several different types of anxiety. And on average, 1 in 6 people, 1 in 5 women, and 1 in 8 men will experience depression at some stage in their lives. And just like anxiety, there are several different types of depression. Every day in Australia, 7 people will commit suicide. So what does this all look like if you're trying to run your own business? For whatever reasons, there is still a stigma associated with sharing anything to do with mental health issues. Sure, we share posts on Facebook about how we empathise with people who are going through depression, and we support things like Are You Okay Day? But think about it. Have you ever really heard a conversation amongst small business owners talking about mental health issues? There is a fear that if you own up to the fact that you're struggling, you'll be branded as weak. And how can your clients and your partners have faith in you and your business if you can't even hold your own life together? We're supposed to be constantly upbeat, sharing our wins and our successes, but mention to someone that you're doing it a little tough, and suddenly the energy changes. People just don't know what to say or how to deal with real conversations. Obviously, this is a huge topic and not one that we're going to be able to solve or cover in just one episode. But the intent of today is to raise the profile on mental health issues for the small business owner, to start a conversation and maybe even help someone recognize they need to seek additional assistance or offer other ideas of things that you can try to put in place as coping mechanisms. Now, I'm not a medical professional, nor do I claim to have any of the answers on this very big subject. But I am a small business owner, and I am also a person who has had depression in my life. So I get what it's like to have to get up and run a business when really all you want to do is stare at a wall. As always, I chat to a number of experts this week in an attempt to shine some light on mental health from a few different angles. If you feel as though you are struggling or not coping in any way, then please, I implore you, reach out to someone, anyone, friend, family, doctor, but seek help. You are not alone, and to quote a popular phrase, this too shall pass. The first person I chatted to about all of this big subject is Fiona Cosgrove. Now, Fiona's the founder of Wellness Coaching Australia. She has over 25 years' experience in health, fitness, and well-being. She holds a master's in exercise science and in counseling, and is a certified and licensed wellness coach with Well Coaches in the US. I figured if anyone would have it all together when it comes to this whole wellness thing for small business owners, it would be her. So I asked her, how does she bring wellness into her very own hectic life, and how does she walk her talk?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'd love to be able to answer, well, I just do it just like that. Sometimes I don't think I do it. I think that we teach best what we most need to learn. And I think I've been lucky enough to be able to be studying this area for long enough to know where I have my own sort of pitfalls. We're all different personality types. Some people thrive on pressure, I guess, and I need a certain degree of challenge to get my energy high, but I also know that I can go a little bit too far sometimes. So in terms of looking good, I don't know about that. I guess I've also worked in a very young industry, so in my late 50s I've been, you know, for 30 years working with people often 10, 20 years younger than me. And I think that keeps you young in attitude. And also in fitness, I'm lucky enough to be able to say, hey, it goes with the job in that you do stay physically active. So that would be my only, and it's, as I say, it's certainly not a boast. It's just a situation that I'm lucky enough to have been always in the habit of exercising. In terms of holding it all together, as I say, sometimes it all falls apart. But I just realize that we are all works in progress, and I don't think there's any one place we get to and we say, hey, I've just got it all working perfectly. I'm still working on it.
So the first thing I would love you to take away from today's show is that none of us have it all together 100% of the time. We are all a work in progress. Some days we know exactly where we're going and how we're going to get there, and other days, well, it's probably a good start just showing up. Fiona shared with me that one of the first places she sees people putting pressure on themselves is around the shoulds. You know, I should be doing this or I should be doing that. A lot of those beliefs stem from things in your childhood.
This idea of what you've been told as a child or what your shoulds are in your head, what your introjected belief system will really change the way you view your own world, your own behavior, and usually everybody else's. So being able to identify your value system to see if it is actually still working for you, I think is something we often work with people when we're doing wellness coaching. And it's surprising what changes they can make when they really stop and look at it.
We're going to talk about this concept of examining your thought patterns a little later, but for now I want to hear from a few of our other experts as to how they handle their busy lives and take care of their mental, physical, and emotional health. I sat down for a great chat with Australia's leading small business author, Andrew Griffiths, and asked him how he maintains a sense of balance in his life.
For me, the biggest thing that I've worked out in the last few years, it means not being stressed out all the time. It means not being exhausted. It means treating myself kindly. And that's, you know, taking extra time to do the things that I need to do and eating better and just enjoying my life a lot more. So wellness is a multi-pronged thing for me. Mostly I always start with my mental well-being, that I want to take care of my, you know, how my head is and how my brain is. And that means plenty of sleep, plenty of rest, not, you know, exhausting myself, doing the things that I love, spending time for me outdoors, doing all those kind of things is where I start. And I find then the more of that I do, everything else naturally follows. I naturally eat better. I naturally exercise more. I naturally feel better if my head's right. But if I don't get the head right, nothing else seems to work.
What I found interesting in chatting to Andrew was that the first place he stopped when talking about overall wellness was mental health. In his book, The Me Myth, he spends time talking about how the people he's associated with over the years has made a big difference to his state of mind.
Funnily enough, the healthiest I've been in my life physically was when I had a lot of friends that were personal trainers. Now, that happened just strangely and by default, but all of a sudden I'm spending weekends and time with a pile of active, you know, engaged, loving life kind of people, and you can't help but become a part of that. And I thought it was a really interesting little experience for me, those few years in particular where I was with them, simply because I saw, wow, imagine the same thing happens when you're spending time with people that are perhaps not like that, that reflects your life. So yeah, it's very much about who you spend your time with. Lay down with dogs, you get up with fleas.
So I know we've dedicated an entire episode previously to the effects that company brings to you and to your business. But it's such a powerful thing, I just had to bring it back into the mix. The real thing that jumped out and slapped me in the face, though, when I was chatting with Andrew, was the fact he said that we need to be humble enough to reach out and ask for help when things are getting too much.
And you've got to be humble enough to be able to reach out and ask for help. You know, we don't realize this, but let me assure everyone out there that most of us in small business are winging it. We're figuring out as we go. We think that everyone else has got their act together. They haven't, okay? They're like us. They're just doing the best they can, and each year, hopefully, they're getting a little bit better about it. So having a bit of humility and the desire and the ability to maybe reach out to others is, I think, an important part.
Asking for help. It's not something that comes easily, especially if we're talking around issues of mental health. Being vulnerable to your peers is not comfortable, although Andrew was quick to point out with me that he believes certainly with men that this is changing.
You know, I do think there's a bit of a shift happening though when it comes to that feeling and intuition. I notice it with blokes. We're telling other blokes that we love each other more. And isn't that a strange thing? There was a time you would never say that. I just got off a Skype call to a buddy of mine, and the closing line is, I love you, mate, and vice versa. And that's a big move for blokes. You know, that's a really, really big thing. You know, or giving each other a hug, you know, when you see each other. And I think there's a lot more of that going on. And I've got to say, not before time, when you let down your barriers and stop trying to be, you know, macho, and you kind of get past all of that stuff, we start to have really great conversations about how we're feeling, what we're afraid of, you know, what we're proud of, all the rest of it. So I really hope, Tracy, that there is a shift happening in the world. And we're having more real conversations. You know, like, it's not, how you going? Great. You know, we're not doing that anymore. We're being more honest. How you going? Well, to be honest, your freaking life sucks at the moment. Well, what's happening? Tell me about it. And men are sharing. And I see it, you know, younger men in particular are sharing, which is kind of interesting as well, that they're being more emotive and being more open. And I think that the younger men are often the hardest ones because, you know, you got to be brave. You got to be all grown up and all the rest of it. So, yeah.
Given the stats that I shared from Beyond Blue at the start of the show, I think it's safe to say that a lot of you listening would have had your own share of depression or anxiety throughout your business career. Indeed, in the spirit of sharing and removing the stigma from mental health awareness, I've had my own issues with depression and anxiety for most of my adult life. And I lost my best mate 3 years ago to depression. It's part of the reason why this episode is so important to me. I feel it's time we came out from behind the shadows and let people know you can still lead a successful business while facing your own internal demons. Some of the most famous and respected people throughout history have been tortured with depression and anxiety. Winston Churchill famously referred to depression as the black dog, and it's now widely accepted that Steve Jobs had obsessive compulsive personality disorder. Estee Lauder had the same. Both Gandhi and Martin Luther King survived suicide attempts as adolescents and were treated throughout their adult lives for depressive events. The list of famous actors that identify with having depression or bipolar is long and illustrious. Robert Downey Jr., Jim Carrey, Emma Thompson, Harrison Ford, and possibly now the most famous, Robin Williams. Even J.K. Rowling, author of the Harry Potter books, revealed in an interview to at one time being suicidally depressed. So if you've ever experienced depression, anxiety, or any other mental health issue, you're in highly esteemed company. Now, we've peered a little behind the curtain. I'm keen to move towards how to best continue to work and stay productive while all of this is going on. I've personally done a fair amount of research on this topic over the years, looking for ways to help myself, and what I've figured out is this. Mental health issues are personalized. What works for me may not work for you. I've tried so many different things over the years with varying levels of success, from medication, which for me was a huge mistake, to changing my diet, exercise, yoga, meditation, mindfulness, sleeping, even laughter therapy. The take home that I'd like you to get from this though is you need to keep trying things. Find what works for you. I have many friends that are on medication and they just know that it's right for them. There is no judgment here. Do what you need to do for you to find an answer that works for you. Just like the rest of our business, there are many different paths to lead to the solution. And that's what our experts want to share with you. So it's time to check back in with our wellness coach extraordinaire, Fiona Cosgrove. A good place to start, I thought, was to ask Fiona how she helps people define what wellness should look like to them.
Yeah, great question. And it's actually something I only probably really addressed fairly recently when we were doing some teaching and saying, well, are we actually explaining to people what wellness is? So optimal mental and physical health is fine. And then I went and Googled or I checked in what does optimal mean and came up with the fact that it is a subjective measure again. And if we can stop buying into the notion that's put out all the time is this is what we this is how we should be living, this is how we should be feeling, and stop and actually say, well, what do I want? And this is why wellness coaching to me is such a valuable and it's a rewarding way of working, because we're helping people find out what it is that they want rather than coming in and saying, this is what you should want and I can show you how to do it, which still exists in about 90%, I'd say, of the practitioners that work with people around wellness. What we try to do is just get the word out there that wellness is subjective and wellness is about being the best you choose to be. And usually for me, I kind of go, wellness equates to energy. And I don't think I've ever found a better description of really what, when people want to be well, I think everybody, if they were given a list of things that they want, yeah, they want peace, balance and all that stuff, but people want energy. Because the lack of all the other things is what drains the energy. And when you drain your energy, you're not living well.
Wellness is such an ambiguous term that I asked Fiona, is there any way to help people drill down just a little further?
And I think the answer for me is, and I often do presentations on this area, and I try to get through to people to ask them two questions and say, what do you want more of and what do you want less of in life? And very rarely do people put money. So I think if we can get those insightful questions and incisive questions that actually get straight to the heart of it, the words that people write in answer to that question, that's the start. Because by accepting that they need either more sleep, more peace, more balance, more happiness, more love, whatever, they're starting to highlight the areas that are missing. Most people say time, and that's interesting because you can't give someone more time, but you can start the conversation around, okay, so what do you do with your time now? Or even better, if you had more time, what would you do with it that you're not doing now?
Okay, so that's a great place to start. Grab yourself a pen and paper or open Evernote and jot down those questions. What do you want more of in your life? And what do you want less of in your life? If you take some time to really dive in and put a list together, I think you'll begin to find that there are some wins that you can have in working with depression or anxiety, and they'll be in your answers.
Your life is what it is. It's what you choose to be, and some things are in your control and some things aren't. So if you're under pressure and you have to work, you know, to a deadline, how you work is probably the thing that can be modified sooner rather than later. And I think that there's a very, very common thread in complete and utter frenzy in the way we live our lives. And I know that for me, being able to make changes in terms of just the way I think and knowing what I'm doing when I'm multitasking or I'm not focusing, and those sort of few changes you can make to help people actually be calmer.
This concept of working at a frenzied pace is something that as small business owners we can fall into. Now, as we talked about at the start of the show, quite often we're responsible for numerous areas within the business. And we need to be able to bounce from one thing in the business to something that feels like the polar opposite in the next breath. All of this can lead to stress building up. Stress can then lead to feelings of overwhelm, and those feelings can very quickly escalate to feelings of anxiety or depression. So let's explore with this stress thing in a bit more detail for a moment. Catherine Maslin is an author and a naturopath and a small business owner. So when I asked her what the biggest problem she sees presenting in her practice from small business owners, you'll not be surprised to learn it.
Stress, of course, is the biggest issue that we see, and there's so many people that are under immense amounts of stress. And stress is one of the biggest causes of all kinds of illness. So because people are really stressed, we're seeing a lot of issues with people not being able to sleep, having digestive problems, having issues with their hormones and other things as well.
Let's talk about the sleep one for a second, because I know many business owners who've told me that they go to bed but their mind is just ticking over, telling them all the things they didn't get done in the day and everything else that they're going to have to do tomorrow. Turns out having a routine just like you do for kiddies, getting yourself ready for bed, can be a great thing for business owners.
It's very important that when we're preparing to go to bed, that we give our bodies what it needs to do that. So if you're on your phone checking emails right before you go to bed, of course your mind's not going to be able to calm down. We really need to give ourselves a good hour before bedtime to just calm and settle down. So that means turn the TV off. It means maybe dim the lights in the house so that kind of there's a little bit more ambience. It means, you know, getting into a bit of a routine where you're brushing your teeth, maybe doing a bit of reading, doing some calming down activities that take away from the decision-making stuff. You want to just really try and get in a calm zone so that when you do go to bed, you can try and still your mind as much as possible. So for some people, even doing a short meditation before bed can be a really good thing. I find myself that really helps to kind of dull out some of that, the thoughts that are going on about all the million things that I have to do day to day.
Oh, and for those of you who lay in bed and play with your phones, check Facebook, read emails or play games?
So studies actually show that screens, like the brightness from a screen, actually affects your pituitary gland and messes with your production of sleep hormones. So in the body, if you imagine back in the caveman days, when there wasn't any electricity, there was just firelight, when the sun goes down at night, you sit by a fire and that's really the only source of light. So naturally the body is actually winding down. It's not going, okay, there's no light, it's time for me to start creating my sleep hormones. So because we have artificial light, so we've got kind of light and a lot of the time really bright fluoros, that will affect our sleep a little bit. But also we're directly looking at screens, and that actually affects the wind down of cortisol, and it actually impairs the production of sleep hormones. So imagine then, you know, we're either watching TV or at our computers till late at night, or we've got our phones in front of our faces right before we go to sleep. It means that your body just doesn't know what to do. It's getting very confused between awake time and sleep time.
As a small business owner, possibly one of the biggest gifts you can give yourself each and every day is good quality sleep. So just to really drive the message home about why we need to get good sleep.
Sleep is as important as the air we breathe, because if you don't sleep, then your body actually doesn't repair. When we're sleeping, people don't realize that your body's actually doing more than while we're awake. It's doing more detoxification. It's repairing your tissues. It's balancing your hormones. And it's also processing all the information that you've come into contact with during the day. So if you're cutting your sleep short, either on purpose because you're just so busy and you're staying up really late, or if you're having trouble sleeping and that's cutting into your sleep time, it's definitely going to affect your performance. It's definitely going to affect your health and how you're feeling day to day.
If you are one of those people who cuts into your sleep because you just think you're too busy, then hopefully hearing what Catherine has had to say will help. After all, forcing people to go without sleep is considered a form of torture. You won't be on your best mental health game to begin with if you aren't getting good quality sleep. The next piece I want to look at in the mental health puzzle, though, might seem a little strange at first, but hang in there with me. It's food. There's plenty of research now coming out about the links between gut health and depression. In fact, even as recently as July this year, the Sydney Morning Herald ran an article about the links between our gut brain and mental health. The gut brain controls 80% of our immune system and 20 unique hormones, as well as most of the body's neurotransmitters, including dopamine, glutamate, and 95% of serotonin. Now, serotonin controls our appetite, but it also talks to our brain in terms of mood updates. So the research is beginning to show that when our gut gets out of whack, it affects our serotonin levels, which can affect our mental health. Now, I know personally that food affects my moods. I know when I'm going through a bout of depression that food makes a big difference to me. But let's refer back to our naturopath expert to explain the whole role of food.
So there's no one perfect diet for anybody. We're all individuals with our own needs, our own problems. But there are some real fundamentals that any healthy diet should have. So a healthy diet, for starters, should be comprised of whole foods. So we're talking about foods that are made without being refined, without taking away their fiber, without really messing with them too much. So a whole food diet would comprise mostly of fruits and vegetables. It might include some whole grains. It might include legumes, good quality meat, and nuts and seeds. And really, if that comprises 80, 90% of your diet, you're really on the right track. On the other hand, a lot of people have problems with digesting wheat foods. So often we think, if we're having cereals or bread or pasta, that that's actually a healthy meal. But for most of the population, it really isn't. And wheat is very difficult to digest, and it also causes gut inflammation too. So if you're eating lots of wheat, it can mean that you've not, it'll impair your digestive system, and then you're not actually digesting your other food properly either. Another big one for people is dairy, and particularly if people are having digestive problems, if they're cutting out dairy and wheat for a couple of weeks, often those will subside, and then it means they'll have more energy, they'll be absorbing their nutrients better too. So if you're looking at a diet, it's important not to, think, well, paleo's for everyone or vegan's for everyone. It's important to look at, well, what do I actually thrive on? What does my body need? But also looking at, is it whole food? Does it contain anything that might be irritating my digestive system or causing problems? And the other big one as well is that we're eating way too much sugar. So it's looking at reducing sugar and really sticking to whole, real foods.
Sugar is a big one for a lot of us. I know when I'm not feeling great, the first thing I crave? Sugar. But oftentimes that can be exacerbating the problem, because it's not just the obvious sugar, cakes, lollies, etc. It's the sneaky sugars that we would never have thought about.
So most people recognize that if they're putting teaspoons of sugar in their cups of tea or coffee, or they're eating a cake, that they're eating sugar and they shouldn't eat that food. But what I find with my clients is that so many people are eating just teaspoons and teaspoons and teaspoons of sugar, but they don't even realize it. And they're in some of the foods that we think is healthiest. So if you look at like a healthy diet, like what the kind of modern interpretation of a healthy diet might be, you might think that you might have cereal for breakfast, maybe some low fat yogurt, you know, you're eating some bread, you might make like a dinner at source. If you're buying anything packaged, then that will have sugar in it too. So cereal, really high in sugar, one of the highest sources of sugar. Pretty much that whole commercial cereal aisle should be avoided like the plague. The other things that are really high in sugar is that low fat yogurt. So anything low-fat dairy products are usually loaded with sugar. So the low-fat yogurt is one of the most unhealthy foods, and it's one of the things I think a lot of people think is a nice healthy snack. The other thing is bread. Often there's sugar in bread. Any crackers that you eat have sugar in them. Anything packaged, so from pasta sauces to stir-fry sauces to even cans of tuna and vegetables, canned beetroot has sugar in it, and it's already really naturally sweet. So once you start going down this little rabbit hole and start reading, turning over labels, reading them in the supermarket, you'll realize how many of the foods that you eat every day have sugar in them. So it's all these little bits of sugar that actually add up throughout the day. So we need to be really diligent when you're buying your food, check the labels, and not the nutritional label, which is quite confusing. You want to read the ingredient list and look for sugar on there.
Besides causing insulin and blood sugar imbalances, refined carbohydrates and sugars use up the B vitamins we need to sustain good moods. In fact, in the book, The Ultramind Solution by Mark Hyman, MD, he says, and I quote, "There is no scientific controversy here. The evidence is in. Sugar creates inflammation. The insulin-resistant fat cells you pack on when you eat too much sugar provides nasty inflammatory messages, spreading their damage to the brain. In fact, researchers have suggested calling depression metabolic syndrome type 2, because instead of just having a fat-swollen belly, you also get a fat, swollen, and depressed brain. And psychiatrists are starting to treat depression and psychiatric disorders with an anti-diabetic drug," end quote. So if you want to look for foods that will actually help with moods and feeling good, go for things like avocado, berries, mushrooms, onions, tomatoes, seeds, walnuts. Now, the reason behind each of these are different, but basically you want to find foods that are high in omega-3s, which are your good fatty acids, have antioxidants and folic acid. Mental health issues are a huge topic and one I still don't believe gets enough press. I know the short time we've spent together hasn't even scratched the surface, but I do hope in some small way, knowing that there are other people out there running businesses and dealing with their own black dog helps. Australia is pretty fortunate to have some very good support systems in place. So if you're listening to this and thinking, you know, I probably should reach out, then I encourage you to do so. Maybe you could share this episode with your network and encourage a real conversation amongst your business peers. Whatever it is, raise the profile of small business owners and mental health. We are in this together, and it's time we stop hiding our anguish. A big thanks to my experts this week, Fiona Cosgrove from Wellness Coaching Australia, author, naturopath and small business owner Catherine Maslin, and Australia's number one small business author, Andrew Griffiths. As always, the biggest thanks goes to you for listening. Thanks for the emails. I've been enjoying hearing from you. Don't forget, if you enjoyed the show, then please do leave a review on iTunes. They help the show to reach more small business owners and spread the word even further. You can keep the conversation going on Twitter at @NABS_podcast or on the Facebook page. Until next week, I'm leaving you with a quote from my favourite author, Paulo Coelho. You drown not by falling into a river, but by staying submerged in it.